Welcome to Let's Talk Micro.
Hello, my dear audience. Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Micro. As always, I hope you had a great week. And of course, you can always find Let's Talk Micro on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, GoodPods, wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find Let's Talk Micro. As for our social media, I am on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, and Blue Sky Social as Let's Talk Micro, on X as Let's Talk Micro 1, on LinkedIn as Luis Plaza, and I have an email address which is letstalkmicro@outlook.com. So either via social media or via email, you can reach out with any feedback, any suggestions. They are always welcome and appreciated. So please go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, download episodes, and if the app allows you to do so, please go ahead and leave a review. Thank you so much for the support. And speaking of support, as you know, the Let's Talk Micro podcast does not have any sponsors. So if you want to support the podcast in any way, you can do so via a Venmo link or via Buy Me a Coffee, KOFI, both links available on the show notes. And I just wanted to share with you that recently, last week, someone actually donated. And of course, I'm going to maintain their privacy, but thank you so much for your donation. You know, it really helps. And the goal is, if you support the podcast, you know, I'm definitely able to go to conferences and connect with people and bring more content. So definitely thank you. Okay, so if you are looking to learn more about antibiotics, please check out www.learnantibiotics.com and the Learn Antibiotics book available on Amazon. These resources include cheat sheets, practice tests, games, and more, and they are being used by thousands of people worldwide and may be helpful for you or your colleagues. Great resources from Dr. Timothy Gauthier, a very passionate pharmacist. Okay, so if you haven't listened to the previous episode, please go ahead and do so. It was the next episode of the AMR series that I co-host with Andrea Prinzi. And by now, I'm sure you have listened to some of the episodes. As you know, Andrea is wonderful. She brings so much energy to the podcast. So thank you, Andrea, for always, you know, co-hosting those with me. I enjoy them a lot. And we always bring some great guests. And this time, you know, was no exception. And the guest was Sonali Kalathia. And she's a pharmacist by training, and she works in the industry. And she came to the podcast to talk about macrolides and lincosamides. And if this is the first time you're listening, your very first episode, first, welcome. And what I'm talking about is that within the podcast, there's an AMR series where we break down antibiotics and we talk about things like mechanism of action, intrinsic resistance, and we have been going over the different classes. And this time, this past episode, it was about the macrolides and lincosamides. So if you work in the lab in microbiology, you definitely have performed some sort of testing with these. You see them in things like the Vitek cards. Maybe you have done a D test. So when you have worked with erythromycin and clindamycin. So as usual with this type of episode, Sonali talked about the mechanism of action. She talked about intrinsic resistance, you know, which organism does this group of drugs treat. So, and we always, you know, refer you to the CLSI M100, which is a very important document and very useful for you to be able to do your job as a microbiologist. So definitely check out this episode if you haven't already. Okay, so let me briefly talk about today's episode. And in the podcast, we have done episodes about bacteria, we have talked about fungi, we have talked about gram stains, but we haven't talked about mycobacteria. We haven't talked about acid fastness. So this episode is an introduction to AFB or acid fast bacillus. So in the episode, I am joined by Dr. Felipe Cerqueira, and he is an associate director of the Clinical Microbiology Lab at the University of Alabama in Birmingham. And in the episode, as I said, you know, this is an introductory episode, so he goes over acid fastness. You know, he talks about mycolic acid. He talks about stains, you know, like quinine. He goes over what it's called the processing of cultures for AFB, which depending on the sample, some involve decontamination. So he talks about that. And he goes over, you know, the media that is used for this type of cultures. He talks about the length that you have to keep these cultures. He talks about the NTM, which is the non-tuberculous mycobacteria, and he gives some examples. And for those of you that are taking boards, he goes over the Runyon groups. So, as I always like to say, all in all, such a great episode, so informative, so let's go ahead and listen to it. So, typically in the podcast, as of right now, we have gone over bacteria, we have talked about Gram stain, and today I'm excited because, you know, we get to talk about a topic from the lab that, you know, those of you that work on the bench and if you have been through like a medical lab sciences program or if you're a microbiologist, you know, you're familiar with. You hear terms like, you know, like beaded gram-positive rods, you know, we hear things like quinine and modified quinine. We hear things like acid fast and partial acid fast. As you know, whether your lab is, you know, compartmentalized and maybe you have a separate AFB section where, or if you're working wounds on the bench, let's say, and you get some rapid growers on which happens, right? Day one, day two negative, day three, there they are on the plate. So I'm very excited. So with me today, I have a guest and he's gonna do like an intro episode to acid fast bacilli. So with me, I have Dr. Felipe Cerqueira. Dr. Cerqueira, welcome to Let's Talk Micro.
Thank you so much, Luis. So yes, my name is Felipe or Dr. Felipe, whatever. I know you've had some already introduction on CPEP fellow. I believe Dr. Kristen talked about that. So I've recently graduated from a CPEP fellowship. I have a PhD in microbiology and immunology from the University of Michigan. Yeah, so I'm now at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, where I'm an associate director of clinical microlabs. And one of my sections that I cover is the AFB section. So I'm excited to talk about this topic with you.
I'm definitely very happy to have you. And just like you said, so I invite the audience to, if they haven't checked it out, I mean, Kristen Smith, she was on the podcast and she talked about the examination for the ABMM and, you know, touched a little bit on the CPEP fellowship. And I have definitely met a lot of fellows throughout, you know, ASM, and a lot of them, they're listeners. So thank you, including, you know, yourself. You have told me that you listened to some episodes. So I definitely appreciate you listening to them. So I'm definitely very excited to, you know, listen to you and learn. So let's go ahead and start with like an introductory, as I said, you know, type of talk. So what makes acid fast bacilli different from your typical bacteria?
Yeah, very good question. Because at the end of the day, they are gram-positive bacteria. But what makes them special is the production of mycolic acid. So this is a really waxy substance that makes it hard for things like Gram stain. So Gram stain is a water-based stain, but when you have you're coated with this hydrophobic surface, it's really hard to stain by that way. And that's really like what differentiates mycobacteria from typical bacteria.
Yeah, and like you said, yeah, they're Gram positive and they do stain. When you stain them, they do look different, and that's why, you know, you get that like that beaded pattern on the slide, which, you know, and I mentioned this before, and of course, you know, the patient is the most important thing, and we do this for them, but it's always, you know, this requires some extra steps that we're gonna be talking about, and it always happens, like you're very busy on a Saturday, full bench, and then you get one of these beaded ones at 1 p.m. or 2 p.m. and it's like, there you go, it's gonna be a late day. But, you know, of course, you know, it has to be done, and we get it, and when you're learning and you get one of these, it's also very important for you to get familiar with the process and continue learning. So so maybe you can touch a little bit on relevant diseases and patient populations.
Yeah, so I think most people know TB complex or tuberculosis. This is a really pathogenic, really contagious, human-specific pathogen. It usually presents in the lung, and you get this really bad lung infection, basically forms holes in your lungs. Luckily, in America, we don't have that much antimicrobial resistance, but it's definitely an issue throughout the world. And we have very little new antibiotics against TB to treat it. But it also, TB doesn't only infect the lung. They call it the great mimicker. It can kind of infect from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. There's been a case somewhere of TB infecting that part of your body. And then we have some of my favorite, which is the NTMs or non-tuberculosis mycobacteria that can also infect the lung. So it's really common in a disease called bronchiectasis. This is basically a pathology of your lungs not being able to clear. So you see this in cystic fibrosis patients, but it doesn't have to be cystic fibrosis. There are certain predisposing factors like smoking, age, being underweight that might lead you to bronchiectasis. And what ends up happening is we isolate some NTM from the lung, and that ends up something that it needs to be treated. But again, not NTMs can be outside of the lung, just like TB. One of my favorite bugs of all time is Mycobacterium abscessus. And as the name implies, it forms abscesses as well as pulmonary infections. So it can present a whole different range of clinical presentations.
Perfect. And while you're in the topic of that, before we kind of move on, and I don't know if I could ask, because I always mention, like, in my case, with, like, I like Pastorella, and so I like the thing about how you find it in a variety of animals, about how it doesn't grow in certain media, biochemicals. So we all have that organism that, whether maybe has a mechanism, it can be something visual, it can be a number of different reasons that makes it right, that we get become interested in them. And I was just curious if what makes what makes it your favorite, if you can tell us.
What makes it my favorite is several things. One, it's a rapid grower. I'm impatient, so I like Mycobacterium, but I don't like that some of them can take so long to grow. But abscessus is one of the rapid growers. There's also different subtypes that behave differently in a human being. They have different antibiotic susceptibility profiles. There's a lot of really cool genetic elements found in abscessus that we don't see. It can present in so many different ways. I mean, it's just a really fascinating bug to me.
Yeah, right. There's something about this organism, how the way that they always keep us, when we think we have figured things out and we could continue learning. So there's that element of surprise there. So I can definitely see that. And as I mentioned, for the audience, when you get this rapid growers and you do see them on the bench, because they're normally, and Felipe is going to talk about the processing and things like that. But from the bacterial side, you have a culture and you keep it, depending on the source and the site, anywhere from 3 days to 5 days. And at 3 days, for example, if nothing is growing, you go ahead and result it, no growth 3 days, your culture is negative, you're done, discard your plates. But with these ones, you have that pattern where you do see them on the bench, and first day is negative, second day is negative, and then day three, there you see your very tiny colonies. You do the gram stain, and then you see those beaded gram-positive rods. Okay, so there is a process to this. So, and maybe if you're in a lab and you might hear the term, okay, I'm processing, and they use that, and if you have a separate department, they're doing this process where there's some decontamination taking place. So, Felipe, can you talk more about the processing and decontamination procedure that we have?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a good point. These words, they can mean different things to different departments and different people. In AFB land, processing, concentration, decontamination, they're very specific things that we're looking for. So the first thing that we look for is, or that we have to do, is decontamination. And this is because even our rapid growers are slower than typical bacteria. So even 3 days, if you have Pseudomonas or staph or something, it's going to outgrow our rapid growers. So the first thing we have to do is kill all of those things off. And that's the process of decontamination, where we incubate our primary sample with a strong base, NaOH. And that alone should kill off most, if not all, of that typical bacteria. And again, mycobacteria is resistant to this because we have this waxy coating. And NaOH is an aqueous solution. See, chemistry, you always have to think about chemistry in aqueous solutions. And then there's, after that decontamination process, we concentrate it, so we put it in a centrifuge. For a lot of mycobacterial diseases, the bacterial load is actually pretty low. So if you have this big sample with a bunch of NaOH, and you just take a tiny bit of it, and you spin it, and you plate it, the likelihood that you'll detect it in culture is actually pretty low. So we have to concentrate it, take out the what's on top, and just use the pellet. And then processing is what we refer to as this whole process. So we incubate it with NaOH to kill off the typical bacteria. We have to neutralize that NaOH with some buffer, some acid, because eventually it's resistant, but not completely resistant. So eventually, if you put mycobacteria in NaOH, it's going to start dying. So you put some buffer in there, concentrate it, plate it. All of that together is called mycobacterial processing, or AFB processing.
Yes, and do you know when it brings to mind, like in my lab, like when in that same place, you know, there's like a little, there's like a freezer that we have where we keep some antibiotics and stuff. So we kind of have to keep an eye on the time, because sometimes, you know, if we need something from back there, either early enough or there's a point that when they're processing, then, you know, you have to stay away and they're doing their thing. So, and I like what you mentioned about other bacteria, like outgrowing and, you know, we go back to those 2 or 3 days. And if you think about those of you that in the audience that you work with cultures, you know, you examine a plate at 18 hours and then all those organisms, you know, like Pseudomonas, Staph, and Enterobacterales, you know, they're fully grown pretty much at that point in time. So you think about that versus that rapid grower, that it's rapid because, you know, in comparison, you know, it grows faster, but still bacteria, you know, regular bacteria will grow faster than that. So that's something to think about. Okay, so when I did the intro, you know, I touched a little bit, you know, I mentioned the term Kinian, and so let's talk about stains.
Yeah, I want to go back up because Gram stain is still actually really important for many reasons in AFB. We should only decontaminate if we suspect there's other bacteria there. So respiratory sources, abscesses, skin, stuff like that. But for example, something like CSF, we don't expect there to be any other bacteria. So something like CSF, we'll check the Gram stain to make sure that there's no other bacteria before we decontaminate, or before we make the decision to not decontaminate, I should say. Also, even with abscesses and such, if there's enough mycobacteria, you'll find something really cool called ghost cells, which is, it kind of looks like, I like to think of it like oil and water, like little oil droplets. You can see that it's just an area shaped as bacilli that has not taken up any of the stain, even the counter stain and a Gram stain. That usually is a little suspicious. And that might be a time where you look and make sure, hey, was an AFB culture ordered on this? Because that might be the problem here. So that's Gram stain. And then we have two main categories of staining in AFB. We have a direct smear. Usually this is a fluorescent smear. We use Oramino here. It binds to the mycolic acid. And then you look at it under a fluorescent microscope and it lights up. So this is really important, especially in AFB, because that's really the only piece of data that you'll get that's rapid, that's kind of immediate. You know, in a couple hours, you can have a direct stain. And that's used for things like taking people out of precaution if they're suspected of TB in the hospital. 3 direct smears that are negative is enough to take them out of isolation. There is one problem with it, though. It's not super specific. and it can bind kind of non-specifically to other things. So every positive fluorescent smear should be confirmed with a confirmatory stain. That's the next category. So confirmatory stains include kinions, as you mentioned. Back in the day, and even some labs to this day use Zeal-Nielsen staining. Both of these are equally good confirmatory stains that also bind to the mycolic acid, and they turn, you know, pink, whereas other bacteria will be blue. So Kenyon stain uses carbofuchsin, that's kind of like crystal violet in Gram staining. And then methylene blue is the counter stain, which is like the saffron in Gram stain. What's hopefully by the end of this, what I want you to take is that absolutely everything in AFB takes longer. So where you can do a Gram stain in, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, it takes at least an hour to do a Kenyon stain. Everything takes longer. And then in the Kenyon stain, you're not using just alcohol, you're using an acid alcohol. You need a really stringent de-stain to get that carbofuchsin outside of non-mycobacterial cells. So only after you get that positive confirmatory stain would you say, okay, this is, there's some AFB in here.
No, I'm glad you brought that up, yeah, because I was going to ask that about the, it does take longer. It's not like with the Gram stain that, you know, that you examine, you know, you do like your 10 fields of view and you're examining. With this one, you really takes a while. So when you have that person, it's, you know, and depending, I'm guessing, you know, sometimes, you know, as micro labs become more centralized and they send all their AFB to one place. So that's a lot of work for that person. And for the listeners, the colors are kind of like the opposite of the Gram stain. So if you think of it, I mean, when you're counter stain and the Gram stain, which is the saffron, and you know, it's pink, and then, but however, on the Kenyon, it's blue. So if your organism, you know, it's not acid fast, it keeps your counter stain, which at the end is blue. But if it's resists being decolorized, which is, you know, that's the property of the acid fastness, you have that first reagent, which is your carbofuchsin. Okay, and I do remember, yeah, I mean, I've only worked with Kenyon, but I do remember, like, also years ago when I was doing an MLT program, that you had, you know, you talked about the, you know, cold stain versus, you know, warm stain. And I remember those things, but I'm sure a lot of people in the audience, you know, remember those too. Okay, so now let's talk about, you know, you said definitely, you know, that things take longer. So let's talk about, you know, media and growth requirements.
Yeah. So, okay, you've gone through processing. You're left with the pellet that hopefully should only be mycobacteria left. The first thing you do, of course, is you make your direct smear to do the Oramino stain. Media, common media that's used for AFB labs are the following. There is LJ slants, which is Lowestein Jensen media. It's a hard media for me to pronounce. But these are slants. They're green. They have something called malachite green, which inhibits typical bacteria just in case they were able to resist that NaOH step. And they also have eggs, like actual egg. So what I find interesting and kind of what deters a lot of labs, including my own, from using LJs for our primary medium is that a lot of typical bacteria have gelatinases that will chew up that the slant, then it becomes this like soupy mess. So if you're contaminated, you have contamination, it makes it really hard to tell what is the contamination and what do we do with that. We actually put ours on Middlebrook 7H11 medium. So there's 7H9, 7H10, 7H11. There's minor differences in all of these, but basically these are all for mycobacterial isolation. And then there's midget broths, or MGIT broths. This is a liquid media, and it has a little silica base at the bottom that detects changes in metabolism. And if it detects any growth, mycobacterial or not, it will kind of fluoresce. And then the machine will will show, oh, there's some growth here. And then you're left with this liquid, right? So you don't have colonies, so you have to take that, plate it on another solid media like a LJSLAN or 7H11 media, and then start the process again. What's important in all of this is something called PANTA, P-A-N-T-A. Each of these letters represents either an antibacterial or antifungal, again, to try to suppress any bacteria or fungus that might have broken through the NaOH decontamination process. That's in the MIDGET and the 7H11 media, selective media.
Yeah, you know, definitely, it just, I remember when I started working and you see that, like, with that malachite green, it has like this color that it reminds me of like an antacid magenta. That's what I remember that it looked like. That it's just like something that you don't see typically in other areas of the lab. And typically that you keep those overall, you know, I mentioned that in your bacterial culture, when you are putting, you know, you have it there. If you have blood cultures, you know, you keep them for 5 days. If you're doing media, depending on the source, it can be up to 14 days. You know, you get 3, 5. When it comes to your AFB cultures, what is the length for it to be considered negative?
Yeah, good question. So if you're using the MIDGET broth system, 6 weeks of no growth is enough to rule it out. If you're not using MIDGET, you know, it's not required to use the MIDGET broth. You have to wait a full 8 weeks. So 2 full months of just waiting. So you can imagine as a medical director, I get a lot of calls of, why haven't you told me that it's negative yet? Well, we're still waiting on things to grow. It grows slow. It's a constant conversation that I have with providers. I mean, I understand you have your patient in front of you. You want to know the answer, but mycobacteria does not care. It just takes its time.
Yeah, you know, it's always right interesting when you see it from both points of view. And as you said, right here, you know, there is a process and we have to wait and we don't like it. And things in microbiology overall, you know, they're time. They're about time. You know, you have to let it grow. Then if you set up a susceptibility, you know, that takes time. If you have to isolate the organism, that takes time. And I can definitely, you know, see the other side of the coin where, yeah, you're treating someone and maybe they're not getting better and you want that answer. So it definitely has to be, you know, frustrating. It's not like other areas of the lab where you get that answer pretty quick in the same day or hours even. So it has to be frustrating. And yeah, so you mentioned because I remember also when with the blood cultures, like if there are blood cultures for AFB, then I mean, I don't know, I'm sure some systems, you know, they automatically change the time, but I remember that you had to manually go in and if we had a fungal one, we have to punch in 28 days. And then if we had an AFB one, change it to 42 days. Okay, so this next question, which is definitely if you're going through, you know, a medical lab sciences program, and I know that this is something that we have to learn. And you get asked when you're taking like a certification exam, so you have to learn this. So can you talk about the running groups and provide some examples?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm also really interested in like the history of things. So if you have the time, so Dr. Ernest Runyon, he's the one that created this. And he wrote a paper basically on why he chose these groups. So it's really interesting. So there's 4 different groups of Runyon, according to Runyon. The first one is the photochromogen, that's group 1. The first 3 are all based on the ability of the bacterium to produce pigment on solid media. So they'll produce like a yellow or orange, or they won't. So group 1 only produces pigment when exposed to light. So at first, you know, it'll be kind of just grayish color or kind of white, kind of dull white. But then if you leave it out near a window where it's exposed to the sun, after a couple weeks, it'll turn like neon orange, basically. It's really cool. So these are species like Kanzasii. We see that a lot in our cancer patients, immunocompromised patients. This also is Marinum, Marinum's really cool. It's called the fish tank granuloma. People who are even immunocompetent might have a cut and then clean their freshwater fish tank, and they'll start to have skin lesions. Usually we can grow Marinum out of that. So then the second one is scotochromogens. And basically these are bacteria, mycobacteria that always produce pigment. These generally, not all the time, are considered to be less pathogenic. So common one there is Gordoniae, and we call that tap water bacillus. We drink it all the time. It's in our tap water. So if you can imagine if you're using sputum, maybe a little spit will be inoculated into that sputum, and that spit will have some Gordoniae. So it's a really common mycobacterial contaminant that is not really clinically relevant, but we isolate all the time. The third one is the non-chromogens, and it doesn't produce any pigment regardless of light. So this includes TB. TB doesn't produce pigment. MAC, which is really common in those bronchiectasis patients that I mentioned earlier, and really so many. So these are slow-growing, non-pigmented mycobacteria. And then lastly, just to shake it up, it actually has no relation to pigment at all. These are all of our rapid growers. So this includes my favorite abscessus, a fortuitum complex, which is made up of many, many species that I can't even keep straight in my head, as well as some others, like smegmatis. And that's a common QC bug, actually. So that's what's used there.
Yeah, and so definitely this is something that, as I said, if you're studying for a certification, make sure you review this. I love the historical thing. I always love when someone comes in and they give us a little more. And it's always nice to get that background. So thank you for that. And for the audience, we talked about the mycolic acid and the acid fastness. And there will be a separate episode at one point in time where we talk about Nocardia, because that's another organism that we see on the bench. And this one, is partially acid fast. So you use, a weaker acid and you go through the modified kinion and you end up with like a combination of both colors when you do the Gram stain. And if you, and those of you that have done this type of stain, when you're doing, get one of these rapid growers, you do this partial acid fast and you get everything, everything is pink. So that's something that you experience when you're testing this. I already asked you about why it's your favorite, but is there anything else that you want to talk about rapid growers or any other organisms within this group?
I think what's, especially within the rapid growers, it's actually really difficult to treat. TB, we know it's the most virulent mycobacterium. However, there are very clear guidelines on the treatment of TB-related disease. That does not exist for a lot of rapid growers. So for the most part, rapid growers, these are bacteria that you die with and not of. They affect your morbidity, but not mortality most of the time, with exceptions, of course. But it's really difficult, even if you look at the CLSI documents, which determines the MIC breakpoints for a lot of the rapid growers, we really don't have as much data as something like TB. And there are really great clinicians and scientists that I can think of that are working on that. But that's something that I wish we had more research in. And as a director, I wish I had more data to show providers with.
As the episode, it's coming to an end. Is there anything else that you want to add?
No, I think this is a good introduction. I left a lot of little details out, and I could talk about this for days, but I think what's important to know is that it's important to know, as you said, the run-in groups. These are things that are tested on my boards as well, on the ABMM board. I think that you should know that it just takes a long time. Even if you're a tech or if you're a tech in a lab that doesn't have a dedicated AFB space, it's still important for you to know this stuff. Know how mycobacteria look in a normal Gram stain. Know what ghost cells look like. As you said, it's partially acid fast, so it'll be kind of beaded. These things are really important in determining care and doing things like talking to your director to be like, hey, maybe we should send this out for AFB. We see that all the time, and we isolate things that are clinically actionable, and we end up, helping patients, which, as you said at the beginning, really is why we're doing all of this, right? So I'm really lucky and really glad to have the opportunity to talk about mycobacteria here and hopefully spread some knowledge.
Yeah, it is my pleasure, and definitely, and as you touched on, definitely very important, and we have those techs. You're getting that initial Gram stain, and so it's very important. And not only that, there's many challenges when it comes to Gram stains, and right, we always experience that sometimes they don't match what's growing on the plates, and so that's always an ongoing challenge in the lab. Getting that proper training and get everyone there. But yeah, it's definitely important understanding how different it is, and if you're not working on a space where you're actually doing the processing and things like that, but understand that you are gonna get some of these organisms going through your bench. Yes, typically day in and day out, lots of MRSA, lots of E. coli, lots of Pseudomonas, but you will get, especially, if you're working on, like I mentioned, rapid growers, you're doing a bench where there are like some soft tissue infections, you can get it on respiratory samples. So keep that in your mind that it's just, you might have that separate space, but understand how the stain works, how the organisms look like, and that. Well, Felipe, thank you for this. I'm very happy that I know that it took us a while to schedule this, but I'm definitely very happy that we had the chance. And definitely, you're more than welcome if you want to talk more AFB or about anything, any other organism. Door is open and you're more than welcome. So thank you for taking the time to be in Let's Talk Micro.
Of course. Thank you for the invitation.
My pleasure. And that, my dear audience, it's the end of this episode. I hope you enjoyed this introductory episode to acid fast bacilli, AFB. As always, I enjoy sharing this information with you. Shout out to Felipe. He was the one that suggested to come to the podcast and do this episode. Very grateful. So those of you that are listening, if you always, if you have ideas, any suggestions, if you think that you have a good episode that you want to come on and talk to the audience about, please let me know via social media. So thank you for the support. Stay tuned. Great things coming your way. But please continue bringing that passion to what you do. It's so important. You do such great work. So as always, stay motivated, stay safe, and of course, continue talking micro. Until the next time. Bye.